Honorable members, good morning.
Morning, Chief.
Yeah, just want to check if I'm audible. My tablet here is telling me that I'm unable to access my camera. Every time when I press on the camera, it's unable to access camera. Zoom can't access my camera. I don't know what's happening. But I hope everybody hears my voice. Honorable members, this is the meeting of the portfolio committee. We will be having a report, an annual report from PINEL. I hope we are all present here, and PINEL delegation led by the department as normally is present. I expecting the deputy and the minister to be present, but I can see that maybe the deputy minister is present, the DG is present. Therefore, I welcome all of you, honorable members, the minister and the deputy minister, you are all welcome. DG, you welcome. Honorable members of the committee, including the staff, you are all welcome to this session. We won't be wasting a lot of time. First, I will give the secretary just to give us if there is any apologies.
Good morning, Chair and honorable members. The only apology I've received so far is from Ms. Chabalala, who will not be able to join us.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Secretary.
There is also an apology from the male chairperson. Unfortunately, she says she couldn't make it today.
Okay.
Chairperson?
Okay. Is there anyone from the board with the deputy or somebody of that position?
Not necessarily. Chair is us as executives. All the executives are in these meetings.
Well,
can we request Kachalia here? Good morning, Chair. Can we request the reason for the apology from the chairperson of DNL? Because this is an extremely important meeting, an extremely important stage in DNL's life, and I think the committee needs to know why exactly she cannot be present. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Honorable Kachalia. Can you provide us with that reason?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I really have not received any specific reasons except that she won't be able to make it, and she has asked me to relay the message to the committee, Chair. No specific reasons given. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, but I think the Honorable Member Kachalia is correct with his concern, because this is a very serious session. We'll be dealing with the report, the annual report, and of course the executive, it plays a very central role. But the governance is also important. When you don't have any person from that, it's only the executive, it's a bit problematic. The Deputy Minister, can we get your sense of what is really happening?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair. I must say that I really find it regrettable that the chair is unable to be in this meeting. Even if there would have been reasons on her part, that would have given rise to having at least the other board members, there are other chairpersons of board committees who could have taken the responsibility to be here. Can I, Chair, whilst the meeting is going on, if the committee may so determine, we will endeavour to really try and get hold of the board chair to try and even get the other board members to connect, because it's not so much about having to have been in Cape Town for that matter, as is usually is the case. So we would have expected them to have connected. And we will have to really deal with it, Chair, outside of this meeting. I consider it very much unacceptable and quite regrettable, Chair. Thank you. I'll ask perhaps maybe Bangani and from within our team, if we could just do the legwork as the meeting is underway to connect with the, and I'm sure Carmel, including the acting group chief executive, could do likewise to communicate the feeling that the meeting has insofar as the absence of the board. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much, Deputy Minister.
Chairperson? Chairperson? Member Clark?
Okay.
Chairperson, I must just raise my dismay around this as well. And I really think the committee needs to send a very stern letter to the chairperson of the board.
Okay, can I hold you there? Can I hold you there? I think we are addressing that. I think the point from the deputy minister is trying to get the reason and also to get anyone from the board, any senior person from the board, to come in. I think let's leave it there for now, up until we get to know that nobody is coming, and the reason that the chairperson is having are not enough, and then we start from there. For now, let's just continue seeking the reason, and then we continue with the meeting. Well, I don't want us to delay the meeting on that. Can I get the denial while we are still expecting to be updated on the board, whether it's available or not, and why? Can we so long continue asking the denial, of course, through the department and the ministry, to provide, maybe the Deputy Minister will give us the first address.
No, thank you very much, Chair. Present in the delegation, other than the Director General, as well as the department, we have from Janelle, the Acting Group Chief Executive, William. I'm sure he's going to lead the presentation together with Carmel, the group finance officer. I would make this remark, and I think it's common cause. Over the last few years, Denel has been going through very difficult patch, to the extent that particularly the year that is unfolding has seen much of the financial challenges hitting home, in that the organization is faced with a number of challenges. We've seen employees taking to court, given the financial problems that the institution is going through. This is brought about by a combination of things. I think a number of them, the concentration in terms of activity in the Middle East, which has seen some problems. leading to some of the finances running dry. We've also seen the depletion in terms of the budgets, particularly one considers the Department of Defense, which is a major source of activity for the DENEL, and many others that have really compounded the situation there. However, Chair, the board, together with the executive team and ourselves, are seized with the challenges that the organization has, and we will, through the articulation of the annual report, including the financial issues, be able to expose the extent to which the challenges that face the organization are and what are the remedies that are being proposed. With that, Chair, I'll request that the acting group chief executives, perhaps they will indicate as to how they propose to go ahead with this together with Carmen. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Minister. Deputy Minister, can we go further to Janelle?
Thank you very much, Honorable Deputy Minister.
Unmute.
I have unmuted myself. Am I not audible?
I can hear you from where I am.
I can hear you now.
Okay, all right. If I may start, thank you very much, Honorable Deputy Minister. Thank you very much, the Chairperson, Honorable Members of Parliament. I'm William Hlakwane, the current Acting Chief Executive of DENEL. I'll take you through the presentation with me as the Deputy Minister, as alluded to. I have the CFO, Carmen Lekhlantsh, with me. She'll assist me with the financial part of the presentation. And Meshi Angema, who is our group HR executive, will then end the presentation with the some statistics, you know, on human capital. So if I may start, I'm not quite too sure, Chair, if the honourable members got presentations with them, or do we need to flag the presentation in the Zoom, or do we proceed with the proviso that they do have presentations?
I suggest to flag it on the screen. It always help us to concentrate to you also while speaking.
Okay. All right. I'm not quite sure if the secretary has our presentation with
her. Mr. Hlakwane, I have made you a co-host, so you are able to share it.
Oh, am I? Oh,
okay. Yes, right. Yes.
Okay, let me just go there. Can we all see this presentation? Honorable members?
Yes, I see it on the screen.
Yes.
I don't know.
Yes, it's clear.
It's clear. Okay. Thank you very much, honorable members. I'll then proceed. This is the index of the presentation. Chair and honorable members will cover the 2019-20 results. We'll also cover the irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure. We'll also go to a point where we talk about the audit matters, the financial sustainability, the HR in terms of the social economic impact, and then we'll conclude the presentation. I hope that I'm audible enough. Weigh in, I'm too quick for you. Please stop me so that I can be slow to you in order for you to can be able to follow the presentation. Thank you very much. So I'll start with the introduction, which is the foreword of why and the reason why DENEL exist in its current form. We'll note that from the defense view, DENEL is a national security asset, and its primary purpose is to design and develop and manufacture defense material. It is the custodian of the sovereign and strategic capability. So in a nutshell, we do support the security cluster, the national security cluster, not only defense, but the whole security cluster with the sovereign strategic capabilities. Now, with regards to the NDIC that was then asked to look into DNL's future and the whole of the SADC, and its main purpose was to look at the impact of the liquidity within DNL. And they have gone as far as saying, look, if DNL does not exist, it will compromise the national security. It will collapse the defense industry. And enough to say that the mass exodus of skilled personnel are already happening. It was a risk then, it's still a risk now, it will be a risk in the future unless we stop the bleeding. The last one is on the loss of the critical capabilities that at the moment we are facing and is busy being eroded. So the national strategic perspective, you know, from the DOD, which is the National Department of Defense, is that they cannot afford to lose the skilled employees within DNL, and purely because we offer this strategic and sovereign capability to them. We have gone through a process, Chairperson and honorable members, through the SADC, which is South African Defense Industry, in developing the master plan for the industry. And in that master plan, we zoomed into various aspects of why is it that we need to revitalize the defense industry and ensure that we do still keep that sovereign capability within the country. And part of the comments that came out of the this exercise that has now been approved is that if we do not change the way we do business currently, or if we don't support the defense industry, we will become the technology takers, meaning that the technologies will be developed elsewhere in the world and will have to adapt to that technology, meaning that we won't be able to, as we do now, have the technology wherein we sell and we are the leaders in technology. We'll become vulnerable in terms of the sovereign pressure, wherein the countries outside of South Africa, they will threaten us whichever way means they could, and we won't be able to defend ourselves, and we'll not be able to diffuse the competitive technology. You will know that in South Africa, or DNL per se, it is regarded as one of the third in the world in terms of the world-class manufacturing and design of the defense material. So we will lose this competitive advantage if we don't do anything about DNL. So in forward and opening, Chair, that will be my first statement. I just want to take you quickly through what DNL capabilities are. We have the capabilities in artillery. We have capabilities in security and border control. We have capabilities in naval. We have capabilities in aerospace, infantry, and also training, offer training on various aspects, you know, in the country. And we have this wide range of various skill sets that we have in the country. As we speak today, the aerospace industry, and as well as the artillery, it is the sort of the cornerstone of our business at the moment, and purely because some of the businesses are not taking shape in other sectors, and specifically for the fact that the defense spend has diminished, and we are now forced to go and look elsewhere for new businesses. So that would be my forward, Chairperson. And at this moment, I will hand over to our CFO, Carmen Lachlan, to take us through the financials. Carmen, are you online?
Yes, I'm online, William. I just don't know why I'm not being showed.
Just direct me in terms of the slides. I will help you.
Okay. So thank you. Honourable members, I'm not sure why my face is not on the screen, but I hope this is okay. Honourable Chairperson, so thank you, Honourable Chairperson, members of Parliament, our CEO, Deputy Minister, Minister of DTE. Before I commence, I just wanted to communicate that we managed to get hold of our chairperson and she will join the meeting at 11 o'clock. We also have with us on the call one of our members of the board, Ma'am Gloria Serobi. She's chair of our FIC and so she's also on the call. So moving on to the results for 2020, it's been another poor year for Denel. Our revenue has been down by 20% over the last 3 years. This year we recorded a revenue line of 2.7 billion against highs of 8.43 billion about a few years ago since 2016. That revenue reduction has been largely due to reductions at Aerostructures, our PMP business that makes bullets, Dynamics business that makes missiles, and our Denel Vehicle Systems that does the vehicle business. The 4.4 billion rand losses totals over the last 3 years. And as I said, it's due to the revenue declines in those areas, as well as the fact that we had really serious contracting and export permit related issues with NCACC during the COVID-19 pandemic lockdown that we experienced when our borders closed. And I guess most importantly of all, we have a high bloated cost structure and cost base where we have a huge number of labor under recoveries that we've not been able to reduce in the short term. We have a crippling interest that is a result of our note program, and which I try to give more information on later. We have legacy obligations. When I joined Denel, we had creditors sitting at 1.1 billion. We started to bring those creditors down, but we remain at risk with the high creditor number. And we've had an inability to secure new business and execute on our existing work due to the liquidity constraints that we've experienced. So for the year 2019-20, we recorded a net loss of 1.9 billion rand, which is worse than last year's result of 1.469 billion. Moving on to the next slide, William. Thank you. So if I turn to looking at the balance sheet part of our financial results, you will notice that we've managed to drop our total borrowings. We sit at about 3.1 billion of the 3.415 billion that is our note program. However, it's short-term debt. So within the next 12 months, that debt matures. And so while we were able to bring that debt down through a number of redemptions, and while we did get support from some of our investors in the market during the course of last year, especially in the private sector, and especially from our PIC, we think that the borrowings position, it's difficult, and it also means that the interest that we need to pay doesn't allow us to generate sufficient cash. So if you look across on the right-hand side, you'll see that the NAL is insolvent to the tune of 2.3 billion rand. And if you look at the graph below that, I demonstrate the cash position to you. And what I've shown you on this cash position is that while we had 635 million rand in cash at the end of the year, a lot of that cash was ring-fenced for specific projects, because the way the business model is funded, we get advance payments and guarantees from our customers, so we receive cash in advance, and as we execute on programs, we release that cash into the business. In previous years, and during the years of state capture, some of the sins of the past is that those advance payments were received and allocated to the entire business versus only being allocated to specific projects. When the board took over in 2018, we've changed that model to try and make sure that we ring fence as much cash as possible. And so the long and short of it is we've got the 331 million ring fence for specific projects, with the cash balance at year end of 635, and advance payments received 3 billion rand, which is funded by our banks. And we have a lenders group made up of AXA, of RMB, and of Nedbank. And of that 3 billion, we've got 1.945 billion, which is attributable to the Hufeist program, of which we have 800 million rand in stock, contract assets, and trade receivables. Moving on to the next page, we prepared a graph where we show you the revenue and cash outflow from operations. And the reason that that graph is important is because it shows a declining trend. So the revenue that we are generating is not sufficient in terms of being cash generative enough for the business. So cash generated from operations has reduced significantly as there's been increased investment in inventories, in trade receivables, and in contract assets due to contract delays. So I've discussed that on the next page, but I think that, you know, you want the trend to move upwards so that the NAL can become more cash generative. And this is after ensuring that we've done the previous year restatement of the numbers. So also not a good story on the cash outflow from operations. Moving on to the next slide. Thanks, William. And this is really just a repeat, and the reason we did this was we had a portfolio select committee on the 17th of Feb, and one of the honourable members requested that we at least try and show our understanding of the causes of what led us here. So we did a seven-year look back, and as you can see, the financial performance of the business in terms of the losses we're reporting, after we had the highs experienced in 2016 in terms of financial performance, have declined, and we've got the audited loss of 1.9 billion. Our equity is significantly below the levels that it needs to be, which means that we are not using debt to generate and help leverage our business because we're paying so much in interest. So those equity levels have decreased, and Danel is not only technically insolvent, Danel is insolvent. In terms of our financial position, there at the bottom, I've also indicated those numbers that you've seen on the previous page. I think it's important to mention in terms of equity to the business in last year. So in the FY19-20 year, we did receive a recap of 1.8 billion, which we received on the 31st of August. And then for the 2020-21 year, we did receive a further recap of 576 million. That recap came with conditions. I'll talk to that on the next slide. But that recap was meant to be allocated mainly to debt and to interest on the DMTN program, the Domestic Medium-Term Note program, which I've spoken about. And I'll show you an analysis based on the request from the previous committee, where we look at how has that, you know, how has Danel used those funds over the years. But the message on the slide is that we are insolvent and our short-term liquidity position, unfortunately, has steadily worsened. Moving on to that next slide, please, William. Thank you. So if we look at this analysis that we've done and we did share with the previous committee, I thought it was also important to share with Parliament. If you look back, you'll see on the left-hand side a graph that we've presented which shows declining revenue, declining profits, an employee cost that has kind of remained almost static in spite of declining revenue and declining profits, and a buildup of inventories over the years that as you apply the different standards of accounting, you get more and more obsolescence in terms of that inventory cost. And so if you look along on the right-hand side, you'll notice that there's a bloated cost structure and an inventory level that's building up that becomes more difficult to reduce as you are not able to execute on projects. And so I also put there, just in terms again of analysis, I've shown some of those percentages in terms of how the revenue has declined since using 2015-16 as a base, which was the last time when Danel was profitable. So if we look at today, our revenue has declined by 71%. Our inventory cost represents 64% of revenue. The employee cost over that period has only declined by 10%. And then, as you can see, there's 564% decline in the profit. And then I've also just on the side put some ratios, you know, for those financially ardent among us. But I think there's a little block at the bottom that I also wanted to spend some time on and to show that the interest that we pay year on year since 15-16 is significant. It's about circa 200-300 million rand a year. And for this year, we're projecting about 241 million rand that we'll pay in interest. And if one were to look at that over the last 5 years and then again for this year, you'll see that we're paying interest to service debt of about 1.9 billion. Had we had a different model in terms of funding of this business and capitalizing of this business, those monies could have well gone into our fiscus. However, you know, you have to service your debt. It's important to service debt. And therefore, those are the numbers that we have over the last few years. Thank you, William. Moving on to the next slide, which also then just I wanted to show further analysis of what some of this root cause has been. This is a 15-year view of the government financial support that was given to Danel over since 2007. And what you'll see is in 2007, Danel received a recap of 2.5 billion rand. 1.8 billion rand of that was again to deal with creditors and issues and legacy things that had arisen in the business. And 700 million of that in 2007 was given to capitalize the Roy Falk program, which was a successful program. And, you know, our helicopters are renowned around the world. But then as you begin to look over the years, you can see that apart from the Airbus indemnity, which was to support the A400M program at the Danel Aerostructures business, Danel didn't receive too much recap other than in 2013 from government. And then, as I mentioned previously, if you look again in 2020, we received the 1.8 billion on the 31st of August. And then in respect of the allocation of the 576 million for this 2020-21 financial year, we have been receiving that, but mainly to service interest and debt on that domestic medium-term note program. And so the impact of that is that you've not been able to use that in the working capital of the business. And in last year, our many presentations at these committees, we had asked National Treasury to waive the conditions, which they only did in September to support us, but that was very useful. And we were able to, in November this year, allocate some of the remaining 271 million rand of that recap to projects to be able to bring in a return on equity so that we can use that to be cash generative and to create cash generation in the business. So I'm sure when you go through some of that detail, you'll have many questions for me. But I'll leave that slide there, and I hope that it tries to explain and unpack the amount of support that Danel has been given over the years. Honourable members, Chair, I will pause there and hand over briefly to my interim CEO to talk about Danel's funding challenges, and then I'll come back and talk about the AG's findings. William?
Yes, I'm unmuted. I was muted. Thank you very much, Carmen. I know the picture is not a very good picture that we are presenting today. However, it is the status as is currently. We still continue to face a liquidity crisis in Danel. We have been downgraded by Fitch to RCC, and then we have experienced this non-support, specifically with the banking, the financial institution not willing to assist us and provide facilities, and purely because of our liquidity situation. Our order backlog in the pipeline has been exposed to a significant risk, as we speak, honorable members. And then purely because we are unable to really borrow more and actually service some of these activities that, you know, bring business into Danel. And we know that the defense budget has been declining over the period of time. And this is as a result of these geopolitics, you know, and the way in we are trading. We're not only trading in South Africa, but we're trading internationally. this causes a whole lot of problems for us. Our balance sheet in terms of the debt ratio is our 3.2 over this period. Once we are negative, if we look at the debt equity ratio, we are very high debt and we are negative thereof. Our debt profile has worsened. If we look at our government guarantees have been extended to 2023. National Treasury did waive some, and I think Carmen has shown in the previous slide that we did receive some recap in 2021 financial year, which was the 576. A part of that 576 went into servicing the debt, and the 271, we did reinvest that into operations that we have started that process, I think, last year in December, coming, if I'm not mistaken, wherein we say, let's take this money, let's put it back into operations, let's see how much money can we generate out of this. So that process is still continuing of this particular investment. Our DMTN notes, which is the domestic medium-term note, is at risk as we speak. And of course, yes, we did get a disclaimer from the AG in terms of the going concern with regards to our liquidity situation. So the other issues that we have, honorable members, is that the slow process in terms of selling of the non-core asset is probably inhibiting us, you know, from really getting cash into the business. Some of the customers are ring-fencing some of the monies that they need to accede to us. For example, if you do a project and it's funded from the client, they'll reference that money and tell you exactly how to use that money. So this would be put in a certain extra account, and then they'll have a control of that extra account, meaning that they remove this money from our hands and put it in a special account where it's been managed specifically for a specific project. So this is where we find ourselves in as DINEL. So the underfunding of the process of it is of strategic importance. I'll talk about the funding gap at the later stage in one of our members. So these are some of the challenges that we are facing, and we really need a short-term sort of a advance in terms of the cash. We are in a very, 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 very negative cash position as we speak, specifically this month and next month and going forward. So we really need assistance in terms of the cash injections into the business. So I will ask Carmen, I'm not quite sure if you present the food test and whisper expenditure, regular expenditure, Carmen, or should I go ahead? I'll take this one on. In the year ending 20, we have incurred food test and whisper expenditure of around 3.1 billion. Compared to 2.9 on last year. This is around 80% since April 2018. The backlog expenditure under investigation and condonation is around 1.5 billion. The Auditor General has identified around 119 million of that irregular expenditure due to supply chain policies. We have beefed up the supply chain policies last year, and we continue to beef it up as we go along. In line with the PFMA requirements. As you know that we operate in a different space we are heavily legislated in terms of what we do. There are certain suppliers along the value chain that needs to be authorized to do certain things or certain components of the work that we do. And this poses a problem with regards to the PFMA. So we continue to work with National Treasury in addressing some of these issues. We have since appointed the head of the supply chain to ensure continuity and ensure that there is a governance processes in place as we try to improve our irregular expenditure. We have in the process, or our members, in the process of implementing the consequence management, to ensure that people are disciplined in doing what they're supposed to be doing. Not only that we are doing that, but we are also improving our own policies and processes and procedures to ensure that the said people are conversant with and they do comply with those policies. So I'll leave it to Carmen to take us through the audit report, honorable members.
Thank you, William. Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to also report that our chairperson has joined the meeting now. So if I can respond on the external audit report, we received a disclaimer audit opinion from the AGSA, and this was mainly due to our going concern issue, and the going concern issue was due to material uncertainty in our cash forecast and our liquidity assumptions. We agreed with the auditor general on these in terms of their findings, especially around the cash inflows. The second big issue was that they had found material errors in the financial statements we had submitted for audit. Part of the issue here was that we had 2 years of disclaimers and a number of prior period errors, and the manual consolidation process on our ERP financial consolidation tool was just not a... Sorry, I was just unmuted there, not sure why. So we had put a manual process in place for year end to make sure that we at least use the Excel-based tool to get through the year end. However, there were some errors that the auditors picked up. And then in respect of the big exercise we had done in terms of prior period errors, as I've said to this committee before, contracts is at the heart of Danel's business, and we have more than 1,000 contracts across the entire business where we have to apply IFRS 15. And so IFRS 15 is around accounting for contracts. We've implemented that successfully. However, there were differences in opinion that the auditors found in terms of our technical interpretation of some of those. And our contention, which we have reported in our director's report, was around the complexity of the business, our own knowledge of the business in terms of using specific assumptions for that, and also on IFRS 9, some of the contention there was around collectability in terms of the credit loss model, where they now also applied its knowledge of the industry and knowledge of the business, and which we did not 100% agree with the AG. So on certain of those technical matters, Danel and the auditors continued to be in discussion. However, the findings remained, and we had a number of very robust discussions, especially around the Hoofaced account, which sits inside and contributes towards the revenue line. And then finally, Chair and Members of Parliament, the other issue was around land mobility technology and the limitation of scope around this. As you know, on the 3rd of September, L&T Products, which is the main operating company for the L&T Group, went into business rescue, and a full audit could not be done, and that caused a disclaimer at the Danel FLC group level. It could not be done.
You disappeared now.
Come in.
I am a chair. Yeah, I'm not. Thank you.
We can hear you, Kevin.
Can you hear me, chair? Chair, can you hear me?
Can hear you.
Thank you. So the last point was about L&T and the fact that a full audit could not be done.
I think we have a problem with our board members. Mr. Chakwana?
Yes,
no, sir. Only you, we are fine.
Mr. Chakwana?
Yes, sir.
Hello?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you now.
Okay. Come in.
Carmen disappeared some time ago.
I am here, Honorable Chair. Some of the members can hear me. I think you can't hear me.
Oh. Okay. Continue then.
Thank you, Chair. So moving on to the next slide, those this one dealt with the key issues for the disclaimer. The next slide William. The next slide deals with just external audits, disclaimers received over the years on the different matters. And as you know, the AG's audit for the Nalbina state-owned company is on three things. It's on our annual financial statements. It's on predetermined objectives that we have in our shareholders' compact. It's on compliance. And then I just also put, you know, the auditors that we've had since 2015-16 and just prepared a summary for Parliament. So for this year, we received a disclaimer in all areas from the AG. The next slide, Chair, deals with our external audit fees. And again, I've just listed that. Our fees for this year, which was approved by our shareholder, was 33.2 million rand. You can see that fee is high, and I guess it's high because of the fact that we have all these disclaimers over the years. But certainly, I think the point that we've made is that it's significant for an entity that only makes revenue of about 2.7 billion. However, you know, we've got to get through the compliance aspects of the audit. And for this year, we had an overrun of 1.3 million rand. And so with that, Chair, I will hand back over to William to deal with the financial sustainable matters for Denel and items that are at risk. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair Carmen. Honourable members, with regards to our financial sustainability, we think that we need a very robust, you know, funding structure, which is a short-term capital structure, which is then supported by the government guarantees. We are in a process where we are saying, relatively the current operating model, be it that the operating model involves, you know, the SEPs or PPPs, we diversify our asset portfolio and exploit, you know, the IP. So this is some of the actions that we think we want to engage further with the shareholder in order to be sustainable. We are of the knowledge that, you know, the defense budget has declined, and therefore we have developed the strategy in order to create more efficiency in the system. We want to be able to renegotiate the Hoofster program. As you know, it has been a program that has been late for many years. The production thereof, which is the phase two of it, has not started. And we have started this particular process with AMSCO just to ensure that what we have done in the phase one is on par with the requirements. And we therefore want to renegotiate this particular contract for us to be able to be sustainable. And of course, yes, we have issues with regards to the content of water. I think the Deputy Minister did allude to right in the beginning in terms of the content of water application done by Solidarity. Where we are today is that the decision thereof has gone to the court, and we are still awaiting for the final outcome of that contempt of court. We want to drive the inefficiencies in the system out to improve the program governance and as well as the execution thereof. We want to go to a point where we are saying the organizational structure as is needs to be looked at in order for us to be able to be financially sustainable. And we want to get in a process where in some of these non-core assets can be laid off in order for us to be able to realize value out of them. So there are risks that are posed by our current situation from I've spoken about this in long. Our program execution is under risk, as we know that the suppliers are unable to assist us. The industrialization project, like the phase two project of Wolfenstein, which is part of the industrialization, we need to renegotiate so that it gets busy. So the contracting mechanism on this particular contract. These contracts have been done in the last 10, 12 years or so, we are still reviewing this mechanism to say, can we renegotiate some of these contracts? As they were poorly contracted during that time, and they are not consistent with the current, you know, situation that we have in the country. So we are trying as far as possible to see if we can renegotiate this contract to get best value out of them. So we have received the advance payment from the North Western program, which is around 2.8 billion, of which the 1.935 of it is only on the North Western itself. So we still have the stock, which is around 800 million, which is the work in progress against the prepayment of 1.935 billion. There are liquidity constraints and working capital, as I've alluded earlier, that you know the lenders group are not willing to fund this particular process because of our liquidity situation. We have issues with our going concern risk from debtors and creditors, and lenders are really worried of our situation. And our 12 months, if you look at it, it has been impacted negatively. And because of the obligations that we have, I spoke about our debt equity ratio that we are sitting at around 2.2 of debt against the equity of around 2.4. Which really from a finance perspective, we are worse off. We are highly debt and running at negative debt. Strategically, we have delayed in terms of the strategic actions. You will know that some of the non-core assets that we have, we wanted to dispose them, the assets, applications that have been done. But of course, yes, if you look at the alignment there of down there on the slide, we talk about the alignment with AMSCO and DOD, and specifically dealing with these issues of non-core asset disposal, wherein we have to align as they believe that they are strategic to them, and disposing them often pose risk. So that balance we need to strike in terms of between DNEL and DOD. The issues of the strategic equity partnership has stalled. We will try as far as possible in the future to start renegotiating with the equity partners depending on the operating model that will be, you know, at the end. We continue to suffer that reputation in the market, and that has affected us adversely, and purely from the perspective that we are unable to trade as we used to trade before because of our financial situation. As I've alluded to the alignment, the future stakeholders at large would love to sit with them and then share these particular ideas with them. And of course, yes, we had issues in terms of NCACC that we really have knocked on their door so many times to ensure that they assist us. And they did come to the party at the end. And because of geopolitics, as you know, I think I have alluded to the fact that we are working in a very highly legislated and regulated type of an industry. So we cannot be the rule to ourselves. We have to follow processes in terms of trading. And therefore, some of these things will take long through the NCEC and DCEC in terms of the applications of the permits to trade. So in order for us to mitigate against these risks, specifically on what Carmen has alluded to on the financial side, so we do have these regular meetings between ourselves, National Treasury and DOD, in order to mitigate some of the risks, and as well as the board. Not that we have not made some inroads, we have made some inroads somewhere, but it's a bit slower than expected, because we are in a crisis and we really need to get out of this crisis as soon as possible. And we need to align in terms of our turnaround plan and strategy with the government and stakeholders. We did have some marathons of meetings in the past week or so, and we hope that these meetings will yield something beneficial in terms of the turnaround plan and turning around DNEL to become profitable and stay afloat. We are investing in some various systems in DNEL. As you know that, and some of these people have been working in DNEL for many, 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 many years. And we know for a fact that the world has changed rapidly. And therefore, we need to change with the current trends in the market and current way of doing things. And therefore, we always have to reevaluate ourselves on how we operate. So structural reforms are really important in this as part of the as part of the strategy. And of course, yes, like I said before in the previous slide, that will drive these operational efficiencies in some of these long-making businesses and programs. We have programs that have been there for 10 years, and some of them, they are loss-making. So either we decide to go and exit those at a cost, or we continue to advance them and complete them. And of course, yes, that will be at a cost. But this will be some cost because they are all negative. So our key priorities at this time, we are focusing, you know, our stewardship, contributing to trust and reliability, directed towards those assets and liabilities, having regular meetings with the creditors and suppliers in order to unlock, you know, some of the value. We do have issues in terms of the payments of salaries because they are dependent on each of the divisions to pay salaries in each of in their own rights. They are allowed to make money and ensure that everybody is getting paid at the end of the month. This has caused a lot of problems. That's why we end up in court. However, we are saying let's drive these efficiencies. Let's ensure that people are paid. But with a decline in terms of trade and sales, this causes a lot of problems and fluctuations in terms of the payments that are received by employees on the market. Chair, I did allude to the fact that there is a capability that is unfunded that I would like to share with you. This is that according to different divisions. But the main one, which is the NEL Dynamics, wherein we have lost a whole lot of highly skilled engineers. If you look at the gap, it's about 433. The total is about 683. So the deficit in terms of the unfunded capability is around 683. So let's say we are averaging at around 600 to 500 over the period of 5 years in terms of the unfunded capability, meaning that these are under recoveries. We are unable to recover this money from any of the processes that we are doing. And so keeping the strategic capability, it is costing us this much per annum. With regards to the long-term and short-term opportunities, we are chasing a whole lot of opportunities across the world. You can see in many countries, in EMA countries, Latin America, South Asia, the FIFA programs, actually, the G6, the SICA 400, the missile portfolio. So we are chasing all of this across the world. So the pipeline is anything between 11 to 12 billion over the period of 5 years. It has diminished from 32 billion, and purely because some of the international market had decided not to continue some of the program, and therefore that pipeline has reduced significantly. So in order for us to deliver all of this, we need to have this partnership with the local and international defense sectors to execute these opportunities. And purely because we are unable to borrow money or raise guarantees on this project. So our strategy will then be to partner with them in order to execute some of these opportunities. And of course, there are benefits within the country, not only looking at the international market. In the country, there's a RIFAC Mark II that we can develop in order to increase revenues in the country and also to support the bottom line of the defense industry. There's a Hoofestel, which is the Belgian number two, the program. There's a Rattle modernization, there's a Project Sabula, Samuel replacement, and Project Mali. So these are some of the initiatives that we think, if the government can invest money in them, will be able to resuscitate in the whole of the South African defense industry. And the benefits thereof are the long-term economic multiplier effect locally. Increase the revenue, the manufacturing output, 25, stabilize the defense sector, and also to reduce the unemployment in the country as there's no economic activity. So in order for us to be financially sustainable, these are some of the programs that we're suggesting that we get ourselves involved in. So in a nutshell, Chair, this is the financial sustainability situation within the NEL. I will then, at this stage, hand over to our Group HR Executive, just to give us a brief in terms of how we are faring on the human capital point of view. Mesha, I'm going to hand over to you.
Thank you, William. Honourable members, Honourable Deputy Minister, Honourable Chairperson, the NEL Board members, good morning, everyone. I don't know if I'm audible. Can everybody hear me, Chair?
Yes, we can hear you.
Oh, thank you. I will then move on to the human capital dashboard, which is already on display. Subsequent to that, I will also take you through our progress on socioeconomic impact. So on the dashboard, you would note that year to date, our headcount has reduced by 15%, of which 10% of that turnover is regrettable loss, as our acting group CEO has already alluded. In terms of headcount, we are currently sitting at 2,800 employees, and 1,800 of those constitute our technical workforce. We have also seen a decline in our female gender representation, which is really quite regrettable, as we had actually made significant progress in prior years. We have also in the dashboard given just a high-level overview of our exits. I think the biggest challenge that we've seen here in the technical workforce breakdown, as I've indicated, that we've got a total of about 1,800. 20% of that constitutes our engineers, which is a number that has, you know, since decreased quite significantly this year. About 15% of that constitutes of our design and development technicians, and then 65% being our production technicians. If there are no more questions on the slide, shall we please move off over to the next slide? William? Thank you. In terms of our socioeconomic impact, there was a significant improvement in our triple B status for the period 2019-20 as a result, a level 4 rating achievement under a very challenging liquidity times in Denel compared to a level 6 rating in the prior year. And I think most importantly here, there were three specific pillars that presented an opportunity for creative thinking and improvement. And the three pillars were really management control, skills development, as well as the socioeconomic development. The highlights on the socioeconomic development pillar was, you know, an increase in our Black-owned procurement spend, as it is actually displayed on the screen. From a skills development perspective, the biggest highlight there was the absorption of learners that we actually took very difficult decisions to actually keep within our system while we were actually faced with many other challenges. And then from a management control perspective, the highlight there was the submission of our employment equity report, and I think most importantly, progress that we had also shown in terms of our AIC representation. I don't know if there are any questions on these two slides. That will be all for me. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mesha. Honorable Deputy Minister, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members of Parliament, the Chairperson of the Board and Members of the Executive, members of the Department of Public Enterprise, this concludes our presentation for today. Thank you very much. Hand over to you, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. Honourable members, that is the presentation from...
Can I say something, Chair?
Okay, Deputy Minister.
No, Chair, there's nothing more to add except to say that I see that the Chair has joined us. the chair of the board.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister, and thank you, Chairperson. My apologies again for only joining at 10:30. I just wanted to say that what we've clearly seen is that Inel cannot trade itself out of its crisis, its current crisis, without some capital injection or a few other things that I will say slightly later. I think since we arrived as a board with yourselves as Parliament, we've been looking at Inel during extraordinary times, and it's extraordinary times because of two elements. First, state capture, which by any standard took away critical resources from institutions which are SOEs that are critical to the success of our economy, and Inel is one of them. The second issue being COVID, which has really isolated all workforces. Says that when Inel went in this period, being already weakened by liquidity, it really meant you are starting from a very weak point. And because you have been experiencing liquidity challenges since about 2015, 2016, where we sit today is that every year where we missed an opportunity to turn around the business, either by taking out costs or increasing income, or coming up with some innovation, every year that passes, the problems have really been compounding. And I believe that for our managers and employees, they are in a worse position than many people in the country, because it meant they entered this period with less income when they needed the most, and when they are isolated, losing family members, and when the company is highly challenged, when normally workers would be fully occupied to generate the income necessary to pay for their salary. In the case of Inel, the situation has really gotten even more challenging. I'd like to say to our board, some of the challenges that we experienced, some of which have been identified and highlighted by the Auditor General, all we have to think about is the mindset of all of those managers and employees who try so hard, with their salaries being cut in half in some instances at a time like this. I just want to actually take the opportunity to thank them for still working hard and trying to deliver results during these challenging times. I would like to highlight two issues that I believe are critical as we think of the Inel of the future. The first, which was well articulated to the board by our shareholder minister, is a critical need for a joint vision for the Inel from the Cabinet of South Africa. What we experienced the last 3 years is that no matter how great your plans are, unless we are united in the strategy of Inel, in the business plans of Inel, what ends up happening is that there are undue delays. For example, for the Department of Defense, some of the assets that we think may be non-core and we can get SEPs or we can sell them off, the engagement around how strategic they may or may not be for the defense industry is a critical one. So there is a joint effort right now led by our shareholder minister to attempt to derive a joint vision and an agreement around denial of the future so that we do not experience the same kind of delays. It's really unfortunate that between 2015-16 to today, all those great plans have not necessarily been executed. And you can all imagine it with every year that passes, the pain just gets bigger. Secondly, a recap on denial is still critical. Without an injection of capital to improve the balance sheet of denial, it will be very difficult. Even with the great vision that we all have, to actually turn denial around. However, I have, and on behalf of the board, great hope that the more we understood the challenges of denial, the more we also understood the opportunity in denial. And with the vision that is joined and led by the cabinet on denial, then differences of opinions may lessen so that this company is given an opportunity to execute on all their plans. The acting CEO has alluded to the fact that even with our challenges, Denel still continues to have potential clients knocking on his door. A joint vision about, yes, we want this Denel to continue. Yes, this is how we can recapitalize them, would really be useful, because otherwise the going concern issues for denial are becoming more and more precarious. Chair, I think I will stop there and look forward to engaging with you further.
Thank you, Chairperson of the Board of Denial, Mrs. Shatla. We appreciate your presence. We're worried about the board of Denel not being in this session. We were not satisfied by just a mere apology with no reasons. Therefore, we appreciate that you ultimately came to this session. Honorable members, this is the annual report from Denel, but I just want to indicate that it's very difficult to accept the state of Denel, having visited and do an oversight at Denel and appreciated a massive infrastructure there with a lot of machines and the technician and people with higher skills, and that worries one when you are told that consistently that the entity is still struggling. I think if Denel can manufacture helicopters, advanced missiles and unarmed aerial vehicles and so on, why can't you perhaps decide to do something else, like manufacture police vehicles, defense capabilities that can be utilized locally in the country? I'm not saying we don't need that international market. It's very important because you've been in the space for quite some time. But who will recognize Denel if ourselves in the country, in the same government departments, we cannot appreciate the work that is taking place at Denel? You know, why Denel? I think at some point when we were listening to this presentation, and I think the board chairperson was there, when there was a strong view of Denel diversify itself, its products, you know, so that we don't confine ourselves to armaments or to war equipment and so on, but we can do other things. South Africa doesn't have any source of vehicle that we manufactured locally in the country, and Dinel can provide that kind of an infrastructure to do such thing. Why are we still stuck in one place, even if there is a capital injection? But if we're still stuck in this form, or where there are no other new ideas coming in order to diversify the industry, we'll remain having this particular problem. Let me leave there, Chair. Members of the committee, and we ask members to ask their question. I would like to start with Honorable Kumede.
Good morning, Chair. I hope it's still good morning. Good morning to Minister, Deputy Minister, the DPE, members of the board, and the colleagues, as well as the support staff. You know, Chair, especially if there are situations and circumstances where you begin to internalize the situation, you feel pity, you have sorrow, but what is unfortunate in the situation of this nature, as much as we do sympathize with the circumstances, as the chair of the board states, we do sympathize with the situation. The understanding that ever since you were only given 5 billion to struggle with up until now, but that one is too little to address the situation that is ahead of you. But I want to believe that the understanding of government was that Dinel ought to have been an independent company, a company that in fact is there to boost the economy and supply jobs. It's very, very much unfortunate. You know, when I think of the situation is, we're saying this thing started in 2016. We all understand that that's where around the state capture saga started, as well as perhaps the COVID is last year. But we want to say many of us accepted the responsibility, knowing very well the circumstances and the challenges that we are facing. We must, one way or the other, be equal to the task. You know, I heard a cry that says people were loaded with the sins of the past. This is the situation, unfortunately. Jesus is gone, who in fact could have taken the sins away. But this time around, what is unfortunate is you are to inherit all those sins. Like in a situation of the government. The government that comes in, or the party that comes in, all the sins, all the wrongs, the goods and whatever, those that are there in the country, that government, in fact, will take responsibility of the situation. You are correct, Chair. Dinel has quite a lot of let's say, capabilities. You know, one of it that impressed me a lot is Dinel's intervention in the production of ventilators. That was very good. That was a very good intervention that Dinel had. So it shows that Dinel has the skills, whether they are continuing with the project or because of the stressed kind of the situation, they can't go forward. But it's true that in what you are saying, can't they come up with any other avenue that may begin to bring in revenue within perhaps Dinel? You're quite correct. We don't have a South African-based vehicle. We don't have it. It will be good even if we get whatever we get. You know, there are cars like Tata. You know, those are very simple cars. I don't think Dinel hasn't got that capacity to do all that. So it's very critical and very much important. You know, Chai, I was encouraged by the remarks that were made by the chair in the document that we received, saying that the board as well as the audit committee, they do take responsibility of the report. Whether it's a disclaimer, it's not a disclaimer, it's bad, it's good, but they are saying we take the full responsibility. So that is good, Chair, for the people who are very, very much determined and, in fact, looking forward. But at the very same time, Chair, as the leader, I'm saying to you, you join the organization for the 3 consecutive years. You end up with disclaimers. What are you learning? What are you unlearning? Perhaps to put things into correct perspective. You can't keep on getting disclaimers, and you must learn something. I know that we are saying that the revenue is shrinking, but one way or the other, it's not only the revenue that shrinks. It tells me that even Dinel itself must take an introspection and make sure whether do they have all the proper requisites that makes Dinel to be a viable organization since its establishment in 1992. It has been making fortunes. It has been competing with international countries. In 2018, it produced products worth of 4 billion and distributed that to 66 countries. Where is all that energy gone? The Dinel we know. The Dinel we are expecting to be the Dinel. So, but all those challenges, I think, Chair, will have to be discussed at the later stage. It's unfortunate we don't have enough time to discuss all this. The capacity, as you are saying, when we went there, we were very much impressed. I remember we established friends, we had everything right, but that was the beginning. We did not know what is coming thereafter. Chair, let me say, I agree with the interim CEO, Mr. William, that yes, Dinel is the national security asset, and that the weakness of Dinel, yes, does compromise South Africa, as well as it taints, if one cares to know, the SADI. The SADI is South African defense industry. It weakens it. You know, if it was those days, we wouldn't be on air inside the country, we've got some insurgencies, in fact, that shows that we are weak. Some of they cross the borders, some of them are inside. But I want to ask, this question is directed both to DPE, Minister, Deputy Minister, as well as the Minister. That is there a possibility that Dinel be in a position to be treated like the rest of the SAA? I know SAA has been, it was liquidated and all those things. There are situations where people take a voluntary kind of a situation, which then it means Dinel is to assess all those things. In fact, even if it means it's in the form of a loan, if ever, I'm not a finance person, I'd always say, I just talk, whether it makes sense, it doesn't, but it's something, all what I know at this stage is that Dinel needs to be recapitalized. So what's the way of doing that? I've been saying to our whip, that there are things that are in fact are very much certain. You know, we joined Parliament and were given the assignment to serve on this committee. It will be very bad that Dinel completely collapsed in perhaps in our hands. You know, when you reflect, when you are out of this service and you say to your grandchildren or whatever that there was an organization or a company called Dinel and it collapsed and it was eradicated in my presence. So what I'm proposing is, Chair, in fact, let's try and see whether those voluntary kind of situation. Where do we need to go? Let us not resist that Dinel is in fact distressed. It's financially distressed. Let's not resist that it's a situation. It's even saying Dinel is rooted in the liquidity crisis. You know, when a person talks of something that is rooted, it means there are roots. And these roots have gone down. It will need even caterpillars to uproot such a situation of that nature. And I wish to make a recommendation, Chair. I understand as well that there are situations where there are regular engagements, including National Treasury, DPE, DOD, as well as AMSCO, but including the Dinel board. I wish to suggest, you know, I need people that will speak from the heart. I wish to suggest that perhaps whether we include the WHITs as well, but the chairpersons of the committee enterprises as well as defense, let them be part of this. I'm not sure what protocol needs to be followed, because they need to know the feelings we have as perhaps the committee. I was thinking, Chair, that perhaps this is not the right time for us to ask questions. It's better to make suggestions rather than asking questions. Questions can be avoided in an answering session and not be answered direct, but we may hold the entity accountable if we say these are the things we recommended to you. How far have you gone with them? Because the question, even if the question was wrong, they will say, but we answered that question. But if we say go and do 1, 2, 3, we are expecting that they come back and report to us. I'm worried as if was presented, that about 498 people have exited. Especially we are losing young talents. It's about 249 technicians that are gone, 99 engineers that left us, but we are still adamant. We are saying that we will forge ahead. That's a good motive, that we forge ahead. But these things we have done repeatedly and we have asked them repeatedly. Now, I wish Chair to say, what is the retention strategy of the company? How do you retain skills? You know, because I remember that time when we asked that, they said they've got a strategy of attracting those skills back. And it looks as if one of the things that I do support as well, that short term and it's a long term program opportunity. You know, I'm married to that one. What can we do to make sure that we secure all that? Because they look wonderful. But these are the things that Dinel, they need to do. I want to believe that they need to sort out their export permits. Because that one I know it has a challenge. As well as correct the reputation that they have. There are so many things that they have done wrong in terms of their contractual obligations. In fact, all those things they need to do. You can't keep on saying to people, you know, we don't have money. And finalize, ever since I've been here, we were singing a song of getting the strategic equity partner. I don't know what's happening. It's a song, if it's repeated like this, it has developed scratches. Because we always say that we need to get a strategic equity partner, but it's not happening. I'm not sure what in fact is holding back for us to do all these things. I'm saying, because we are learning these things as we come. Before, I'm not saying that people don't have skills, but we are trying all the possible avenues that in fact will help revive and make Dinel vibrant. I've got a concept that we always use, the appointment of an administrator. What does administrator do? Can administrator help in this kind of a situation that we are facing? I don't know. But these are the things that we really need to look into and make sure that these things are happening. Chair, when reading the documents, it tells you that the AG, as much as I agree that it looks expensive, I'll advise my kids to be the CAs. The 33.2, yeah, it's quite a lot, but anyway, you'll have to pay it. You don't have any other means of doing otherwise. But they have identified, you know, if you follow the document, it's close to something like close to 60 reasons why they have or he has disclaimed perhaps Dinel. I will request that perhaps some of these things are put into a program. And they as well be presented to this committee. Because I'm not sure. I hope questions that we'll ask, Dinel will take them, scrutinize, because the aim of asking questions, the question may not have sense, but it may highlight an element of importance, that these are the things that we need to look into in addressing the challenges that we are facing. I've mentioned this one, that is the strongest strategic relationship that exists between DINEL and DOD. It's very critical. I think even in terms of correcting the repetition, as well as discussing the amount that was taken in advance, that will in fact help in terms of addressing the repetition. I'm not sure about the recovery plan in respect of the export permit, hoping that I'm repeating this for the first time, that it has to be sorted. The finalization as well of the strategic equity partner, recovery from, let me ask this, I hope the minister will implement. I don't know the budgetary processes. If we, through the state capture, we recover some funding, where does it go? Does it go to the fiscus, or it goes to that company where that money was in fact stolen from? So if there are any recoveries due from the state capture, that in fact will be of a great thing. I'm not sure what processes that we have. The other critical thing is, I was hoping that DINEL, out of the exercises of non-core assets, as well as non-profit making of some businesses, the aim was to get the starter capital, let me put it like that, so that we are in a position to fulfill other obligations. But the challenge we are facing is, it's very slow, especially with the non-core assets. What could be the reason that there is a slow? Because if you look at that, you have even quantified it to be at 260 million, which in fact can really go a long way in helping in it's closer to 271 that was mentioned here, that use it to start any perhaps project that may begin to bring capital within the company. You know, there is one thing that, you know, some of the people that are from township, no matter how educated you are, at times you come back and say, hey, let me use it, the township guy, when all the theories you learn from school are not working, then you use it, the township guy. That's why we talk the big doors and all those things. Okay, I was saying, I'm reminded here of a situation as I conclude. If a person wants to win, you take everything that can really make you win. You take risks that are at times calculated, others may not be calculated. But as long as you appear victorious, because that is your aim. I'm reminded of a situation where Argentina, through Maradona scored a goal using his hand. And during that time, they won, because at least he was very clever. He made it a point that the referee does not see him. It was better for him that they won. At the end of the day, he called it was the hand of God. I'm then to use the hand of God, the hand of God. Because I'm saying our study in here, Chair, it says there is 47 million that just got lost for failure to disclose. Perhaps there was a reason, just failure to disclose the fruitless and wasteful expenditure. As a result, 47 was gone. There is 434 million that again went missing. Well, anyway, in fact, it was declared as a loss because they could not, it was understated. That was a loss that was incurred. So some of the mistakes we do, which I interpret them as a goal on our side, Chair, I'm concluding. Yes, I can see you. Yes, which we call it a goal on our side. I'm saying let's try and avoid it. But thank you very much for the presentation. It's a presentation that we feel sympathetic to it, and it was good, and it shows that we're very much eloquent on it, but we can't help not unless we begin to change our stance. Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Kumerde. Honorable Katalia.
Thank you, Chair. I'll attempt to be succinct and to the point under the present circumstances. The NEL's annual financial statements have finally been has finally arrived. They've arrived 6 months late. They were due in September last year. When we requested support from the committee for a vote to sanction the publication of AFSs, we were provided with a curious legal answer, an opinion that said we must abide by the status quo. That same status quo that has given room for the non-production and late delivery of AFS, crucial as it is to oversight, be that as it may. This is a metaphor, however, for our SOEs in general. Defend the status quo, tinker on the outers, and kick the can down the road. Meanwhile, 3,000-odd disgruntled employees who haven't received full pay for 9 months sit with the NEL's intellectual property on their laptops. What will happen to the sovereign defense information is anyone's guess. This board, this shareholder, this executive is accountable for the situation, which Justice Zondo has described as unacceptable. The fact, as he says, that almost all prominent SOEs are on their knees. He goes on to say, it looks like there is nobody who supervises whether or not ministries do their job, DGs do their job, and boards do their job. They're all paid handsomely. I think we need to stop talking about challenges. Good and proper executives, boards, and managers work through challenges and deliver results. I've heard about, ever since I've come to Parliament, I've heard about challenges. I've seen very few results. Let us look at the business units, 2019 versus 2020, now that we finally have the data. Danel Dynamics. Similar revenue in 2019 to 2020, but half, that's 50% of EBIT. That's the biggest business unit. Danel Land Systems, half the revenue, EBIT down 10%. Pretoria Metal Pressings, 20% revenue, reduction in EBIT of 5%. Only Overberg Danel Test Range has shown a significant uptick, but that is a small business unit. Overall, as has been said, we have a net loss of 1.9, nearly 2 billion rand, and an operational loss of 1.5 billion. Despite a strong order book, we are told, of 15 billion, which we can't service in Danel, because there is no money. That is the key point. Can we have sight of this order book, please? Finance costs are 576 million. There is no missile capability, and our designs now sit in the UAE with competitors. 16 G6 vehicles belonging to the army sit in Janelle workshops, and there's no money to fix them. It can't pay salaries in spite of a court order to do so, and the annual loss, as I said, is almost 2 billion rand. I'm sitting here with a letter from one Vinesh Singh, a 7-year-old employee technician of Janelle, which is heartrending, and he's taking Janelle to court in his personal capacity. It's sad. The Johannesburg Birth has threatened to suspend the listing of Janelle bonds if it didn't publish the AFSs. This is not yesterday's story. This is a continuing story. So what exactly is to be done by the highly paid board, by the highly paid ministers, by the highly paid DGs and the highly paid executives to do exactly what? We hear of potential strategic equity partners. Who are they? When are we going to, what are we selling to whom and when? What is envisaged to fix this company? It is in a mess. We've seen a picture of disaster. We have no plan for the future. The Nell cannot, as it's been said, trade itself out of the situation it finds itself. That was said by the former CEO, Daniel de Toit, over a year ago. It's not new. He flagged it then. It's been trotted out again. They all know. The point is, let us get over this talk of challenges. Treasury warned that the Nell would be out of cash by the end of March. What is going to happen then amidst all this talk? Never mind. The minister talks about SOEs and Danel rising from the ashes. Well, never mind rising from any ashes. From an investor perspective, there is a huge guarantee investor exposure, which is unsecured, which has resulted in a pipeline freezing. Only the PIC is really remaining with 2.4 billion on its books. All others are exiting. In terms of suppliers, they want cash up front. Customers are not ordering, and there are many penalties for late delivery. Arms Corps has no money to continue with Hofeister. The DVS acquisition, 850 million at the time, is now written off. It was paid with advance payments from customers and with Absa and Nedbank providing half of it. Project management is in a mess. Add in the 400 million in unpaid salaries. And it's clear, yes, a recap is required. But it's not forthcoming. It needs to come, and only the private sector, it must be clear, can do this. But as you continue to waste and lose IP, you lose interest from people, and that too will dry up in time. So there's an imperative to move and to move with speed. We have moved at a snail's pace. We now need to move it with speed, and the penny has to drop. The reality is that we have to look at international players in the private sector primarily. The reality is that local BEE players can't give you the market access that's required. So let that penny drop. Board members have exited. Sibisi, Rapkin, and Nyanda. And now we have temporary CEO replacing Talik Sadiq. Chair, not you, Mr. Mkasa, Chair of the NEL, what are you doing? What is the shareholder doing? We have no visibility thereof. We need visibility, and we need it now. There's talk of a joint need, critical need for a joint vision from the NEL, from Cabinet, driven by the shareholder minister. The fact is, Cabinet has overseen this debacle, and many are complicit in it. We need capital to deal with these challenges and so-called opportunities, not platitudes. We need to move ahead with speed. We cannot rely on bailouts, and even if we could, the cupboard is completely bare. The public sector has failed. The private sector needs to come in. Can we hear what is in the pipeline to address this issue in the realms of reality to ensure that our strategic capabilities are in place and that money is good and that critical skills are kept? It will not, mark my words, happen in this current scenario under the current shareholder with the current management and the current board. Sorry, Chair, was I audible? I finished.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. I was wondering why you're quiet. Honorable Mawotwe.
Thank you very much, Chair. Greetings to the Deputy Minister. Greetings to the general leadership. Chair, from the onset, we want to register our disappointment with what we've just been presented with. But of course, we're not surprised. There's no leadership at Dineo, starting from the chairperson, from the board. There's no leadership at all. All these issues are here because there is no leadership. Chair, I can tell you without blinking that there is capacity at Dineo. There was capacity at Dineo. The capacity that you saw at Dineo is there. But you'll be surprised when you go back next time because they're busy selling what they call non-core assets. So we might go back there and find that they've sold everything. And still, they did not come up with anything. Now, Chair, there's very little that one can engage on this current presentation, but I'm going to go back to the previous presentations that were made. And Mr. Kabwani, we know that you are new. You just came in as an interim CEO. We even failed to congratulate you and wish you well in the new journey because of this bad situation that we find ourselves in with regards to DNA. And we can't really say you are new, but you are there as a COO. Your CEO came here and presented in October last year a new Dineo. And I suspect that you are even part of the delegation. The new Dineo that gave us a roadmap from 2018 up to 2025. And then he came back again earlier on in June here and presented what Dineo was embarking on. The presentation of June said the new Dineo roadmap started in 2018 with fact finding and assessment, went to stabilize, reform and focus, and then it will move to perform in 2022. But we are not seeing anything different. We're still finding new coming to present disclaimer audit opinion. So there's nothing really that has changed, and perhaps because we are new, you must tell us what it is that you are going to do differently. The revenue has gone down by 20%. You've got fruitless expenditure of 169 million. You've got 3.1 billion irregular expenditure. So the situation is horrible, really, Edinel. We are unable to pay the employees. And when I look at your presentation, the key strategic risk that could hamper the implementation of your strategy are the same ones that were presented in July. So the question is, what has been done to mitigate those risks? And the risk, you come here and say engagement with the role player. DOD gave you their investment, their capital investment for the few years to come. You know very well that they've reached their capacity in terms of what they need. Now, if you are running a business and your major customer tells you that I've got enough, I can't buy any longer because I've got enough, what then do you do? Because you need to go and still find that work somewhere else. The alignment issue, how far are you with alignment issue? How come you are aligning with DOD? And it's taking you forever to align. What kind of alignment are you seeking? And I heard the chairperson of the board saying that the strategy needs commitment and all that. From who? Who is not committed to a strategy?
because you should be driving the strategy. It is yours. You adopted it as a board, presented by the CEO, and you should be driving it. So if your own people are not committed to what you want them to achieve, you can't come here and blame us. We're not there. We are just here to come and try to assist Dinelo to go back to his glorious days. Now, Chair, the presentation that was done now speaks about opportunities, but there are top 10 opportunities that were also identified prior to this one. So I want to know what happened to those top 10 opportunities. The presentation of June spoke about Umkhonto, which I still see is still there, Sika 400, which is supposed to be achieved now in 2021. Last year already, there's a support contract to the value of one, I assume it's billion rand this year. How far are we? Because we should have gotten this order by August last year. This is what the report says. So how far are we with that one? RVK PSS, we had 70% probability of getting this order of another 1 billion. So how far is it? We're supposed to have been August last year. May last year, RVK, and then Scout 3 Troop also, there was 70% probability of us getting it, according to the presentation that you gave us. So how far are we? And this year, we are aiming to get Sika 400 and Sika 400 second system. So how far are we with these opportunities? And what are we doing to turn these opportunities into sales? Because otherwise, they can remain forever as opportunities. So what is it that you are doing to then turn these opportunities into sales? And in June last year, when the CEO came here, he gave us a presentation of how the 1.8 recapitalization program is going to be utilized. So how far are we with that? Of that 1.8, 133 million was supposed to be for sustainability investment, Airbus restructuring. 225 million was for overdue taxes. 842 million was for restart operations and credit tax due. And 528 million was for interest and loans. Legacy cost to the cost of 48 million and investigation 24 million. All that view, how far are we now that we have the 1.8 capitalization program before we even embark into the second one, which the CEO, you spoke about that you're going to be embarking on another recapitalization program. Now, last feature, in terms of the regular expenditure and the wasteful expenditure that we've seen being reported by the ATSA, what consequence management is Dinelo going to undertake? In the presentation, they are saying consequence management is key and all that, but it says absolutely nothing. What is it that you're going to do to make sure that you do not find yourself in the same situation of irregular expenditure and wasteful expenditure growing year on year? I thank you, Chair. I'll pause there for now.
Okay. Thank you so much, Honorable Mota. Honorable Mutelezi. Honorable Butelezi is not here. Honorable Kwankwa. Honorable Kwankwa again is not here. And then we go to Honorable Piri.
Thank you, Chair. Let me start by apologizing, Chairperson, because along the route, you'll be hearing some sounds. I'm backstage next to the N1 due to network. But, and also allow me to switch off the video because it might cause more interruption. I'm
sorry. Honorable Period. Honorable Period.
Okay.
I would rather just switch off the video and then because your bed. And then go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. Let me start by greeting colleagues present in the platform, the GM as an executive management, and also the board members, everybody else. Let me observe protocols. Chair, I want to concur with my colleagues that we really are disappointed, but we expected such kind of a presentation that is honest and that takes us to really engage in good faith to say, indeed, we were just not sure what is happening, but now we are sure that it's insolvent. Chair, the word insolvent, it takes our strength away. But without much ado with this presentation, let me go to the question that I have. In their national strategic perspective that they formulated in August, they are saying they require intervention from the government and other related industry, which is your defense. Chairperson, my question is that since this strategy, they formulated it in August, for the past 6 months or five, what are the tangible strategies or information, or be it chair, what is it that they've achieved in terms of communicating with, having meetings with these related industries or partners? Because now I'm interested in the progress report. As much as themselves they've identified they need intervention, I believe they've been running around having different meetings with stakeholders. What is the progress report? What is it that they have in place to say, as much as we need intervention, we've been promised this, and this can work, it might not work. Secondly, Chair, in terms of the strategy, as the Umaudu has outlined, since we ascended the office, we've been told about turnaround strategies. But, you know, my question is that you can't always keep on having new turnaround strategies or turnaround strategies. That does not tell us what was wrong with the previous turnaround strategy. What are the loopholes that they think the previous strategy is not working? And what are the implementable turnaround strategy that they think they will go ahead with them? They need to outline and tell us more of where they went wrong and where it can be workable, Chairperson. Since we went for an oversight in 2019, if not, yes, late 2019. And, you know, when we got there, it was so impressive. The Chairperson, you know, there was a time when she presented, you know, a good turnaround strategy and possible investors. We were told that there are investments that is coming in, you know, they've got orders that were done by those who needed their product. And if they get that thing, it will work very well and Dinel will be up in its feet working and running properly. Then what happened? Can we be told whether they got that agreement or whether they got that opportunity of a better investor? What they presented to us while we were doing an oversight? If not, what happened? What made them not to get? And if really we got that money or the investor is still part of Dinel, how are they planning? At the same time, Dinel has got divisions. Which division is it excelling or is it running on its own? Maybe there's a battle of other divisions. For example, like your on SAA, you've got SAA technicals that we still say there's hope and it's up and running. In Dinel, which division is it excelling or having hope to us? Chair, we're also disappointed in terms of the human resource. One of the things that makes us or the organization or government to have SO is to assist in terms of employment and economic growth. But we are observing the decline or the decrease of employees. Then my question is that as much as they said it's 15%, my question is that, Chair, these employees, are they being proposed voluntarily to resign, or they themselves, they're seeking new opportunities? And if there is a voluntary resignation in terms of a proposal from Genel management and its board, what influenced them, and really what is it that they were trying to achieve, or what is it that they want to achieve? Because really we think the issue of retrenchment is just overclouding the whole country, and it's not, we are not doing well as much as an unemployment rate is hiking on a daily basis. Chairperson, let me also, when we went to Genel, we spoke about the shared services. We even made an example, or we made a call to them to say, we've got SAA that is stumbling, is not doing well, and you've got the capacity at Genel. You've got technicians who can service the aircraft, who can give us more technical or other services, because both of us, yourself as Genel, SAA, and other entities, you can share those services. We made that kind of a recommendation when we went to them on a oversight. How far with it? Because some, as much as Uba Bumede is saying, some of the things does not need us to question. But even though when we gave advice, can we be abreast on some of the advices that we tried to give? If they were workable, they considered them or not? And if not, what are the reasons that make them not to be considered? Our state-owned entities can share services, can even give each other a hand. But what stops that? What law does it stop them to assist each other? As much as you said, you know, they've got capacity even making our own vehicles. They've got capacity even making our own aircraft, then you get so disappointed. I don't want to entertain even the issue of an audit outcome, because I believe if we could get into a sense of them with the strategies they've presented before and currently, let us start there in checking the insolvency of the entity and vice versa, the advices or the plans that are implementable to make this entity to go well. Because we really are, we are seeing the progress of the entity going back or going the route of SAA and other entities. As much as we are saying, chairperson of the board, you must remember, we said it's enough about the bailout. And even parliament, it can't be in a position to bail each and every state or entity out. But then, you know, give us hope, tangible things, implementable strategies. So let me pause there. Thanks.
Oh, sorry. Thank you, Honorable Thierry. It's Honorable Clark now.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm sorry. Okay. Chair, I'd like to pose the following questions. I must say I'm totally shocked and dismayed as the position Genel finds themselves in. And then, you know, this seems to be ongoing for me for quite a couple of years, and there seems no light at the end of the tunnel. I'd like to pose the following questions. What has Genel manufactured, and what are the stats of those manufacturing operations in the past 6 years? What countries have we manufactured for, and what was the profit margin relating to this in the past 6 years? What strategy will be put in place in order to retain scarce skill sets within Denel? And is the training college that still exists financially viable in order to do the necessary training that is needed? Exports have been hampered during COVID, we've been told. But what happened in previous years, as this has been declining constantly in the past couple of years, and how will Denel recover in terms of their export projects? What orders are outstanding on Denel's order book and to whom? What has caused the delays in terms of contractual obligations in terms of Denel? The Royal Falk is renowned, and how many of these helicopters have we been able to, has Denel been able to produce of late? Government capital injections cannot save Denel, and we need to unbundle Denel, bring strategic partners on board in key strategic areas. Has the board looked at this, and what are they going to put in place in order to realise this? What projects are hampered by underfunding of strategic national importance? What is the current status of the Hoefijzer project? And what is the monetary amount of penalties that have been imposed in terms of this contract? Because this contract has been lingering now for 11 years already. How will Denel improve its performance culture, knowledge, accountability, and consequence management, as it seems that the board and the executive have not been able to do this? What consequence management has been put in place to remedy this, and what disciplinary measures have been put in place? The reports that have been referred to SCOPA, what are the recommendations from SCOPA, and will this be brought to the committee for deliberation? How many cases has been handed to the SIU for investigation, and how many people have been formally charged in terms of fraud and corruption within Denel? How does Denel implement a system called ERP that cannot deal with their prior errors and corrections? Why was the system implemented that is not user-friendly to achieve the financial outcomes? When will the salary disputes be resolved, and what will Denel do to honour these disputes? When will the developing of Denel's next strategy blueprint be ready to be presented to the committee? What strategy will be used in order to attract possible international partnerships, as no banks will assist with bonds and bank guarantees in terms of the status quo of Denel? How will we attract partners in terms of partnering, considering the financial status of Denel? Under the operational performance 8 key targets that were set, how many of these targets were met, and if not, why not? And what will be done to ensure that these targets are met? Can you please tell me what happened to Denel Maritime, and what losses did this unit incur? What business units will Denel be selling? And as Denel has already gone into negotiations in terms of strategic partners, please tell us if that has been done, and who are these partners? And will Denel realise the predetermined objectives of the Auditor General that is imposed on them, and how will they do this, and will this be presented to the committee? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Clark. Honorable Komani.
Thank you very much, Chair. Let one also indicate the dissatisfaction of the report to the Portfolio Committee. But introductory Chair, I think we've got the problem of capacity. Because we have got the board chairperson who keeps on lamenting on the mistakes of the past chairperson. And such is not expected because we know, we acknowledge we had the mistakes and the wrongs from the past. But with the current board, we needed the men and women in the board who will be capable to turn the situation around, chairperson, and to explore other avenues and the time to cry about the little budget to make good. We have gone past through that. We're expecting them to use the little that they have to they can make more of that. I doubt this board has got the capacity or the capabilities, and this really calls for them to take a serious stock and introspection on whether they are up to the game or not. Chair. Equally, chairperson, the chairperson is saying they need joint effort and they need joint commitment. But when you need that, you should as well start it from yourself because they are barely visible. They cannot put anything that is tangible that they can say the board has done this. And to this far, we are not being supported. We are not being given a commitment from either the and much as they need the intervention, they need to be given give us a roadmap that was implemented. And when they say they need intervention, would then be in a position to say, oh, they have done this. That means then we need to intervene on this or in this regard. So, Chair, if one needs to go to the questions, the first question would then be, what processes has been put in place to address the AG's audit findings? And the board should account on this matter because it is their responsibility, Chairperson, to ensure that the company runs successfully. And has the delegation of authority been finalized yet? And has it also been implemented? In the denial presentation, Chairperson, they have stated that the PMP will be sold. Can the committee be put up to speed in this regard, indicating units that will be sold, who are they looking for as their strategic partners in this regard, Chair? And Chairperson, in human capital, what is the state of employees' salary? Are all the salary being paid up to date? Because this is a very serious concern. You cannot just have people who are working and they're not being paid and the matter has been dragged for so long. So we need them to maybe indicate to us how far is the process, whether those people are being paid. If they are not being paid, why are they not being paid? How will they then be paid and when? And Chair, the AG stated that the actions can be developed by the board were inappropriate to address the internal, and it is evident by the misstatement identified. The board should then account for this lack of oversight and progress made in addressing this oversight finding, Chairperson. Again, Chair, there's a contradiction between the AG's highlights on distress and the board's assessed determination that the company is not financially distressed. Can the board also clarify this contradiction? Because, Tina, where we are seated, one would agree with the AG that there is financial distress, but then the board said there is no distress. Can they maybe show us evidence that there is no financial distress? And, Chair, what were the recommendations and findings of the NS and Young, which was an independent service provider? And each chair, one would as well ask this in conclusion to say, why was this exercise necessary, and why is it only conducted in 2019-2020, whilst this was the challenges were experienced earlier, and why were not why was this service not implemented earlier? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Komani. Honourable Dlamini. Honourable Dlamini, are you there? It seems as if Honourable Dlamini, the new member that came in the place of Comrade Honourable Mpumlwana, is not here. Malinga. Well, I didn't see Malinga. Tshabalala. I heard that Tshabalala joined us. Yeah, she is here. Tshabalala.
Thank you so much, Chairperson, for the opportunity. Chair, let me hasten to really speak for the sake of it. I think my colleagues have covered me from the first colleague who spoke, Comrade Gumede, up until to the last speaker. So I really don't want to reinvent the wheel. I think much has been said, Chair. I will just hear the responses. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Honourable Shabalala. Honourable members, let's give this opportunity to the Dinel and the department to respond to all these questions. Are we starting with the Deputy Minister or go straight to yourself, gentlemen and lady?
I suggest to give the first opportunity to Danel. The board chair will indicate how they will then deal with the rest of the questions. We may come later after they would have made their own input. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. Let's go to you guys. Mr. William.
Thank you very much.
I will start first, Chair.
Okay, all right. Okay.
Honorable Chair and parliamentarians, I have no doubt that your comments are heartfelt and we feel the same when we are embarrassed with the comments. Let me start talking about the journey of our strategy, turnaround strategy. Our turnaround strategy contains in it aspects that even going forward will always remain, because you are looking for opportunities to create cash so that you can be able to afford your obligations. Our strategy is robust, and the board members would remember that. Within that strategy, we were very lucky in 2019 to have secured the largest contract Dinel has ever had in its history, which was around 6 billion. Why we did not end up implementing that strategy and ended up losing it, which was very painful, is because we inherently have a slow process of approving commercial projects between ourselves, the DPE, and the DOD. And I'm sure that my colleagues in the DPE and my deputy minister will comment further on their attempts to improve efficiency on that side. Equally, and it does not mean that anyone can have the most perfect strategy and plans. On our SEP strategies, and you're correct to ask us questions about what progress we're making, I think we also grinded to a halt on that because the processes that happen outside of Dinel, which is a different level of engagement between the shareholder and the DOD, our processes are too slow. It's very difficult for a commercial entity to make progress in an environment where really it's open-ended. And I'm saying it not because of a complaint, but because it's a reality. We did our best, and sometimes your best is not good enough. And it's And I take the criticism well from Mr. Kachalia, from everybody, saying that maybe we are not good enough. All I know is that the best plans in themselves do not necessarily mean the implementation will be the same. And I think from the DPE side, and I'm sure that between the DG and the Deputy Minister, they will provide you a better context of what happens once the board has placed in front of the DPE their desire, for example, to get a strategic equity partner for some business or to sell an entity that we felt that if we got that cash injection, we'll be able to at least relieve the shareholder and begin to support ourselves gradually and slowly. Even in addition to that, you'll see it is still within our strategy. We had looked at some of the surplus we are having in our medical aid, which you could share with our employees to see if the portion that is for the company could be brought earlier. What makes me sit here and feel within my stomach that African girl, you put your best foot forward, you even got a contract for $6 billion, which Danelle had never seen, to turn around this company because Danelle deserves it. Unfortunately, our processes are just not necessarily fair for Danelle. And it does not mean that government is wrong. It does not mean that government has failed. But I think that somebody said, what are your lessons? My lessons are going forward. And at that point, you will have a board that will probably work very differently from mine. We just wanted to assist Danelle, which we believe very strongly in, and attempted our best. We need to find the best way to be enabling and more efficient for companies such as Danelle. We might not always be perfect. Some of our proposals may not be necessarily the best when you look at the country's own strategic security elements. And maybe some of them, you know, the timing is not right. But I think, and I want to believe that between ourselves, at least, and the DPE, that we are trying to look at the best way to get those processes more efficient. Importantly, I mean, our minister wrote to us as a board to say, having looked at everything that has happened over the period, he does believe that a joint vision coming and an approval of maybe the Danelle's plans by cabinet is one way to get everything that we need efficient. I'm comfortable, parliamentarians, to say to you that this African woman from Limpopo and the board members that are so great, we've done our best. With regard to the challenges to the AG, we will continue to say we appreciate the guidance of the AG. The capacity in our finance division is very weak. You'll recall that we had asked for the Treasury to allow us to determine how to use the last money that was coming with the last recap. Part of that was because we wanted to invest in a better and new technology system so that our finance managers do not manipulate data, through a spreadsheet and to start working systemically. Somebody asked about an ERP system that is so outdated. The systems that we are using, we inherited. So out of this budget that they gave us, we prioritized reinforcing the finance division of Danelle with more people, with a better system, and hopefully the future boards and managers would find it easier to process the data and work better. Even with the weaknesses of this period, we believe that it is worth for you to look at how to best defend Danelle. It is true. On the going concern issues, just like the Treasury told you, beyond 31st of March, the financial position of Denel is more precarious, and the differences are usually technical definitions, which I'm sure the FD will explain further to Parliament. In an eventuality where the company cannot receive any recap and there's no cash coming through, the board will then look at the next processes that are available in the Companies Act to deal with Denel. When the chips are down, people run away. I want to assure you that we sit here only to account. And the fact that we go backwards to remind you where we have come from is to simply highlight the fact that for every year we lost to try and implement even one aspect of the strategies that were always in place, the more the scenario complicates going into the future. But all the criticisms are well taken. But I'm comforted knowing very well that even the future boards, as they look at new strategies, the bulk of what we put in place, they will still carry forward. And secondly, the contract that we lost, which was the biggest Denel has ever seen, I would encourage the next boards to keep looking at the same market because of the amount of work we've done to rebuild those relationships. We continue to learn, just like our country is learning. And one of our biggest challenges as a country is execution. As a board, we can tell you that if we improve on that element, most SOEs will survive, including Denel. And I am certain that efforts are being made. As a board, we might have been impatient, we might have been exacerbated, but I hope that you do not throw away great plans simply because we were not good enough for you. And I will hand over to William with a statement that says the disappointment, I can't even say, because we all have it, we would have liked to have been further than where we are. And I'm sure the Director General and the Deputy Minister are feeling the same way. It is unacceptable, but we are the board that was doing oversight at that time. And I can't run away from that accountability. But as for our plans, and it's amazing, since 2005, there are commonalities with the challenges of Denel. And the core element of what is required to turn around remains. All we need is better execution. Thank you very much, Chair. And I'll hand over to William.
Okay. Okay, Chairperson.
Okay, thank you very much, Chairperson of the Board, Ms. Klasa. Thank you very much, the Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee. I'll attempt to answer all of the questions, and please, if I don't, please don't take it negative that I'm avoiding it. I've been trying to take some notes. I'll try from Honorable Gumete and Honorable Kashalia. I think the questions they have raised with regards to the SEPs are more or less the same. I'll attempt to answer the question on the NACO assets in terms of the slow movement to exit these non-profit making assets and so forth. You will know that we have a dotted line reporting to DOD. Whom they are our stakeholders. Most of the IP that we own, in fact, is sitting with the DOD. So in many years, when this process started, even before my time, that alignment has been necessary between the three parties, which is the DPE, the DOD, as well as Denel, in ensuring that we do not erode the strategic capability, we don't erode the capacities that we have in this particular business. So that alignment has happened. Unfortunately, we are unable to agree in terms of principles. There was a speaker that spoke about the PNP and sell-off, as well as Macon. I think if you look at those and if you look at what DOD is saying, these things are important for me to enable my business. But we are seeing from our own perspective that from where we are sitting, we are unable to fill the volumes. PNP was designed, for example, to put like 80 million rounds of ammunition per annum. I mean, we are barely making 30 million ammunition per annum. So the status at a particular time when PNP was designed and the status today is totally different. So it requires us to have a different way of thinking to ensure that at least we still remain efficient and we are able to make it as a business. So from DOD perspective, it's a strategic sort of a component, a part of that which is the foundry. We see it as non-core, and then therefore we can diversify. So that alignment in terms of the heads and saying what is it which is important to who and how do we start that balance. These are some of the issues that we are dealing with, honorable members, that we cannot go willy-nilly and sell, or we cannot go willy-nilly and lease without consulting. So the consultative process are happening and on various aspects of those SEPs. So I hope I managed to summarize that. There was a question from Honorable Kashalia with regards to the IP, which is sitting in other people's laptops and so forth. We try by all means to secure this, honorable member, we have a secure system wherein we are able to detect when certain information is taken out of the system. However, some of this IP that has been lost, it has been lost because of some of the people that used to work for DNET that orchestrated this to be to happen. And hence the statement that says the people that have left DNET with this particular IP will pursue them, because some of them, we know them, and those investigations are still continuing with the SIU. And unfortunately, the process with the SIU is very lengthy process that not much we have an influence on in terms of the outcome. However, regularly they do come as and when they receive new information to us, and then we do give them sort of the inputs as they require. I'll go to Honorable Umpile Maucho in terms of the irregular expenditure, to say what is it that we're going to do with the irregular expenditure. Yes, indeed, we have developed a policy, picked it up. In fact, we have gone through other SOCs and sort of enact some of the best practices in terms of the management of the of our assets. So we have picked that up. It has been approved. It is not really, I wouldn't say it's 100%, because yes, we're still having issues. There are processes that we just follow below the policy itself to ensure that all of these other controls that the AG is talking about, that we put those controls in place. And it's something that cannot be done over time, because some of it, for example, we need finances to do it. One, of course, is the ERP system, for example. I mean, for you to go and implement an ERP system, at best, you need around 60 million just in the beginning to implement the ERP system. So we don't have that kind of cash to invest in a system wherein we have people that are suffering in terms of salaries and so forth. So we're hoping that as and when we go along, some of these controls that are needed, we'll try and implement them as far as possible wherein they don't require finances, but wherein they require finances, we'll see how we can invest in those to ensure that we keep some of these issues from happening. So those are on the irregular expenditure. With regards to the new businesses, we trade globally, and our market is on the MENA market. The MENA market is the Middle East, as well as the top in the African continent. So in the Middle East, because of the geopolitics that we have as a member of the United Nations Security Council, the trade thereof, it becomes difficult, you know, so to say. And that's where the market is currently for us. Those people, they want our products left, right, and center. But because of the geopolitics, we can't trade that easy. So we are trying elsewhere to see if we can knock on different doors again to look for these opportunities, while the ones, you know, in the Middle East are not realizing. because of those geopolitics, like I mentioned, you know, we are having those issues of trade. And there was a question again relating to the permits, to say some of the permits that were relating to those specific countries in the Middle East were delayed for some time. I mean, some of them have been a year old permits that were not approved, purely because of those geopolitics, that they could not be approved. And these are some of the things that are beyond our control. We are dependent on the lawmakers to actually help us and assist us in resolving some of those issues. So that goes to the alignment I spoke about earlier, Honorable Mpile, to say, I know that we have said many times that we said, we're going to align. Those alignment and engagements are very important. Like I said, the assets that we carry are of national security. The decisions thereof are not made right from the boardroom. They take various rigorous sort of back and forth discussions. And we've been talking to DOD and AMSCO for years in all of this, and we continue to talk to them, and we'll continue to engage them further on some of these issues. And that answers the questions of the SEPs, you see. Even if when somebody wants to come and partner with you, you do not just partner with that particular person. You have to rope this particular stakeholder, because that stakeholder owns that particular IP that we are exploiting. So this tripartite alliance sometimes stalls the process. And I know Honorable Gumede made a question to say, why can't we trade like SAA? SAA has captured customers. Transnet has captured customers. Eskom has captured customers. We do not have captured customers. We have to go there and compete with the best in the world in terms of technology. And most of these countries that we're competing with, they develop these technologies for themselves. They buy it for themselves. We don't have that capability in South Africa to develop these technologies and buy it for us. So they beat us on price in many instances. And some of these opportunities, then we lose them. Wherein we are able to get them, we get them, but we get them at a very low margin, at a very low margin. So these are some of the issues, the intricacies that we are dealing with as DNL. It's a very complex environment. It's not as easy environment, straightforward. It's very complex. And it deals with issues of those security at the top. And you spoke about the top 10 opportunities. I did present in my presentation the slide, my last slide, in terms of opportunities. Those opportunities are still there. The Umkhonto missile, when it was presented last year, it was the same contract that our chair has alluded to, that we have lost that particular contract. Yes, we did realize we did sign the contract. However, we couldn't raise the guarantees on that contract, and we eventually lost it. So those were the reasons. And hence, you find that our order pipeline has sort of diminished. There was a question on the RDK PSS. That contract we signed, we've signed the C-130, we've signed the RVK. I think it's about three of the contracts. I can't remember the third one. So all of those contracts, it's a multi-year contract that we really negotiating with AMSCO. So all of them we have signed. They are orders in hand as we speak. So those are the MRO contracts that we have with AMSCO. The SIGA 400 contract, it was delayed due to the permit issue. Like I said, this contract, the permit was applied, I think, a year ago. It's only about 3 weeks ago that we received a permit on the SIGA 400. So it has taken that long. It's taken more than a year. And you can't do anything but wait up until we're given permission to proceed. So these are some of the intricacies that we're dealing with. There was another question with regards to the consequence management. We are serious about consequence management. We have started the process of doing taking disciplinary actions. We have taken disciplinary actions internally of people that got involved in either stealing of IP and so forth. We have put in the process wherein we have identified issues relating to sort of a performance in terms of the finances. So HR is taking that process on to implement this consequence management with regards to the irregular expenditure. But with regards to the other cases where people are doing certain things wrong, yes, we have done that. There are people that have been implicated in the state capture. We are busy tying the loose ends in terms of the report that has been submitted to us, and once that has been done, we implement those. So the process is an ongoing process, honorable members. It doesn't seem like we are just waiting. We do take actions on all of these issues. So I hope that, honorable Umpile, I have answered most of your questions. If I go to Honorable Piri, there was a question in terms of the strategic intent. There was a question with regards to that you need sort of a tangible output in terms of the process today with regards to the stakeholders. And like I said, you know, we are busy engaging the stakeholders. Those processes are ongoing. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, there's a board of two boards meeting today as part of the stakeholder engagement, which is the Board of Denial and the Board of AMSCO, in engaging on this particular matter. So there are processes that are taking place. I just want to see any other questions with regards to the investors. What happened to the other investors? Yes, we had a couple of investors, you know, from the KSA that came in. Some of them, they wanted to buy the whole of Genel. Some of them, they wanted to enter into a project level or a product level. So we had to take a cognitive decision. We are a holder of the strategic and sovereign capability. If somebody wants to buy you out, meaning that they own the country now, and you cannot let the country be in the civilian's hands. It cannot happen, and it doesn't happen anywhere in the world. So as some of these opportunities are coming, people have their own intentions, and we try and take caution in engaging in these opportunities, such that we don't compromise our own national security. So as and when we go along, as they do come and make proposal, we do evaluate and we do make proposal in fact to DPE in that regard. So we have made certain applications, I think about five of them that we made to DPE with regards to these investors or STP sort of partners. So there is a question with regards to the deadline of employees over the period of time. And there was a question that was asked as to whether is it because of the natural attrition and so forth. Last year, when we went into lockdown in March, at that time, we were already facing financial crisis. Between March and May last year, we lost close to 39 engineers, highly skilled engineers, just at once, and purely because we couldn't pay them salaries. And the picture doesn't look good at all. So we have these highly skilled people that are leaving, and some of them, they're leaving purely because we are not paying them salaries. Some of them, they leave because of greener pastures, but it's few of them. They still want to come back. A lot of them that has left, they say they want to come back. They cannot stay because of a financial situation. You can imagine if you're a very highly skilled engineer, where your skills is well sought after in the world, you are sitting in a company that cannot pay you. Anybody that can pay you the premium will take you immediately. And this is the situation that we are facing. So the dilemma that we are having is that highly skilled base that we used to have, it is busy getting eroded on a daily basis. So we have to stop this bleeding wherein our capability is getting lost. And it's getting lost in the foreign hands, and not in South Africa for that matter. So there was a last question, I think, from the Honorable Peter with regards to the SAE Technical Partnership. Last year, I did engage Mr. Foss, who was then the CEO of SAE Technical. We started the process wherein we had an MOU between ourselves, DPE, and SAE Technical with regards to that partnership. We were evaluating that possibility. And we tried to look at different models that are applied in the rest of the world, like your Embera in Brazil, wherein they have the both commercial and the defense a type of technical services within the same cluster. And from where we are sitting, it is possible to still do this. However, if we were to do it, we'll really do it at a very low margins. And this is one space wherein you need high volumes to then be able to be profitable. So where we are sitting at the moment is that the margins are very low. And the skills base that we have currently, it is for defense and for a specific reason, because our engineers are qualified for a specific reason. If you have an engineer that is working on C-130, is authorized and verified to do just that, which is a C-130. He can work on an Airbus, he has to get a license to do this. So these are some of the intricacies that we are dealing with regards to this. But we continue to explore this particular opportunity. If I go to Honorable Michelle Clark, on your questions with regards to, you wanted to see our 6 years sort of the pipeline, I think I don't have it at the moment. I'll try as far as possible to, on the next time, to give you sort of a 6 year window in terms of our pipeline. In terms of the strategies with regards to the scarce skills, I think maybe I can answer this question. We have tried at some point, I think last year, to have some companies coming over and taking our skills and probably paying them a premium or using them where we need them, we can actually buy them back. But that has not happened purely because of our environment. Our environment is legislated, so you can imagine when somebody works from Denel and is working for a competitor somewhere, and it's easy for that IP to be lost. So these are some of the intricacies, again, that we are dealing with in terms of the retention of skills. Try to summarize I spoke about projects.
There was a question about, also what did we deliver for the last 6 years in terms of tangible programs. And I think maybe you give the parliamentarians an idea of by division, which divisions are busy producing right now and which ones are being challenged to. So just give a feel now.
Okay. Thank you very much, Chair. On that, I'll start with Dynamics. In Dynamics last year, or year before last, which is 2019, we managed to qualify the ADATA missile. This is what is our flagship missile. It's one of the best in the world that we got that qualified to a point that we are now actually building that those missiles. I think 40 of them that the South African Air Force has bought from us. So this is us in partnership with Brazil, in fact, on this particular program. So this is Denel Dynamics. They are the missile sort of a business. We managed to export, I think it's about three of the Seeker 200. They are en route to the UAE as we speak. Those are the unmanned aerial vehicles, which is still sitting with the Denel Dynamics. We managed to do the prototype, which is an upgrade of the G6. We now call it G5. It is currently on trial in the UAE. This is our artillery. So this is what we have produced currently on a DLS. We have produced the RSG-12. I think one of the members, I think it was Honorable Gumede, where he said, why can't we produce a police vehicle? This is a police vehicle for the Dubai police, actually. We did the prototype of it. It's called RSG-12. It is still in the UAE, and it's on trials. We have another vehicle which is called the RG-33 that has been bought by, we signed a contract of around 100 of those vehicles, and there was a follow-on order that we could not fulfill because of our own financial situation. But we have produced the RG-33 vehicles for the UAE. Now, with regard to PNP, we continue to produce a medium caliber ammunition for the Air Force. We have a couple of orders that we got for those medium caliber from India. Recently, I think we got about 20,000. There was a follow order of about 600,000 of that for the following financial year. We are still waiting on the implementability or the possibility of that for the next financial year. So that is on the ammunition side. OTR, which is in the only profit-making sort of a division, we continue to do a lot of the tests, you know, be it tests on the missile, tests on the weapon systems. We continue to do that in OTR in Cape Town. So in short, Honorable Clark, the rest of the world is still interested in our progress. They continue to knock on our door. They continue to say, can you take orders? Our financial situation is not helping us because some of these orders, they require us to have those bank guarantees, or they require us to have the working capital to actually start them. So that's the dilemma that we are, that we find ourselves in. So we take what we can take within our own means, Honorable Member. So if I have the status of Worcester at the moment, is that we did reconvene last year with the team in AMSCO, wherein we had to align in terms of the progress that we have made on the phase one of the development contract of Worcester. So the phase two of it has not started as yet. We still have to complete what we call then the product baseline. The product baseline is that we have to qualify everything that we have done at phase one for us to then be able to start building at phase two. So there were issues. The issues were issues of technical that I cannot discuss with you. But there are issues of technical matters where in certain designs are said to be at a certain percentage or not a certain percentage. There are issues where you say you have done something that was supposed to reach 60 kilometers, but it's now 58 kilometers. Why is it not 60 kilometers, for example? So those are the intricacies that we are dealing with. So we have since applied through AMSCO either to accept those conditions, or if not, find the remedy in which the design can be processed further. So the alignment is that it's happening. The process has been completed, where in AMSCO is going through their own internal processes to address those issues, and we are still waiting for that answer to know if we can proceed to the phase two of the production of the whole system. And not sure of the penalties today, but I think the penalties on this particular program, they are in the region of about 150 to 200 million that we have paid so far for the whole system program. Okay.
And the specification, there was an example given in terms of the ventilators. Just just give them a feel of the engagements with non-defense where we can leverage our existing IP.
Right, sure. So during the pandemic, we were requested by DPE to see if we can assist in the COVID. We developed the ventilator, and there's engineers that are designing the missiles, actually are the ones that designed the ventilator. We have designed 10 of them. We have made models of those that have been approved by SAPRA, and models have been implemented. So the IP at this stage is still owned by Dinel. You will know that the production part of these ventilators requires certain machinery to do it. You require orders, actually, either from the hospital to then be able to offset when you do this. So we have leveraged our skill sets in terms of that. So in going forward, in terms of the strategies, we're saying, look, the engineers that we have are highly skilled, they're highly qualified. I'm sure they can do anything on the side. And hence you will look into our strategy. It's a strategy going forward that then says, let's have a technical division that focuses on R&D and the new way of doing things, and meaning that we're going to look at new opportunities outside of defense, since that defense is declining, and such that we have all of these geopolitics that are preventing us to trade internationally. But we cannot stand with these particular skills and not use it. It's a core capability that can do almost a whole lot of various things. So we're going to set up this particular entity to look at these opportunities. We have opportunities that we already have in terms of the design of the exhaust systems with Ford. And we'll continue in the commercial sector, on the private sector, to knock into their doors and exploit this IP with them. So that process is continue on our members, that we are not sitting with this IP, but we are trying to use the skill sets that we have to generate cash as far as possible. Internally. Okay. So why we have
You're done.
Am I done, Chair?
Yes, I'm just going to check.
I have not answered all of the questions, but I'll try and summarize, because I was trying to go them one by one and just to make sure that everybody is satisfied, that we don't seem to be saying we don't know what we are doing. Let me try and summarize, maybe, Chair, in the next 2 minutes.
Okay.
I won't answer them one by one, but I'll try and summarize and then to say there is a roadmap that we have developed in terms of the strategy that will be presented to Parliament. It still has to go through a necessary processes internally, which is our governance process. It still has to go to DPE probably for approval and so forth. And yes, the state of employees is of concern to us that people are not getting paid. And hence, in my open statement as a chair, we really need assistance to can be able to move out of this phase that we are in. Yes, we are in financial distress. We need to quickly move out of the financial distress. There was a question on maritime, that what happened to maritime. We have since closed the business. Maritime does not exist anymore in Dunelle. We have since most, I think, of the skill sets that were sitting in maritime, some of them have exited, some of them have sort of remained within the name. I'll close at the check in short.
Thank you, Mr. Tokwane. Honorable members, because you have taken a lot of time, let's check with the DM if there is anything to add before we round up.
No, thank you very much, Chair. I think the honourable members, they are questions, even their concerns. I would share the same sentiment as the chair of the board, that they are indeed well placed. I'm just thinking of a better way in which perhaps to satisfy the exchange of information, because even the questions that have been asked, I think it would not have been possible to exhaust them in the time available, in the form they had been asked. Perhaps maybe if the committee secretary can assist by just again following up by condensing all the questions so that they can be dealt with comprehensively for the ease of members to get the information. I do want to concur that we do at times experience some of the delays that tend to impact negatively on some of the entities like Denel in the space in which they are. But that is occasioned by the fact that it's an environment in which a number of interests very critical and important to the state tend to interact, to interface. For instance, on the turnaround strategy that the board had developed, at the point of execution, we, as the acting CEO was indicating, we did come across some of the challenges that require that perhaps there is more time and interface between those organs. The defense might feel that this would jeopardize the security of the state if we were to proceed. For instance, where they were to think that there are some assets that are in within ourselves that we could divest from and sell and get money to come and boost our operations. But it would be felt from other quarters that that would be endangering the security of the state. So I think it is those that have then made the minister to say, first, let's go to cabinet so that there is a single strategy that is bought into by all the parties so that we have a buy-in from everybody on how we are proceeding in respect of that. It is indeed true that in the current situation, without some investment made, some recapitalization made, we were less likely to see in the immediate the entity really trading itself out of that trouble. It's a matter that we are seized on it together with the Treasury. And we have a team between DOD, ourselves, as well as Treasury that is looking into how we could remedy the situation so as to ensure that some of the important, and if not everything that Denel is doing, could be saved. And of course, on a sustainable basis. That is what we are working on, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members of the Committee. Denel is a very strategic asset of the state, and it has to be looked at with the level of significance and importance that it has. If you're thinking of our armed forces, if you're thinking of our Air Force, there's a lot that depends on a viable Denel that is there. The most recent things that speak to the skills flight that is experienced, indeed, it's a cause of serious concern that we have said, let us have a way in which we focus into that, and in the immediate, it is finding a solution to the issue of the payments, payment of salaries, which is an ongoing problem there that the organization is facing. Chair, without taking too much time, I think we do understand the concerns that the committee is making, and perhaps some of the things, perhaps given the more serious matters at play, I would rather not attend to them at the moment. Thank you.
Thank you so much, DM. Thank you so much for that roundup. We appreciate that, Deputy Minister, Mr. Phumulo Moswali, Chairperson of the Denel Board, Mrs. Sasa, and the Deputy, Department of Public Enterprise, DG, Mr. Tlahudi, Denel Executive Team entirely, Members of Parliament and the staff. I think now we are at the end of our session. Members were very long in their input, to such an extent that we could not even put aside time for follow-ups, and the party, there's nothing lost. In the next session, we'll take where we left. We still need to interact closely with Denel, so that we also monitor the situation for the sake of our role as a legislative arm of the state, who have a responsibility to do oversight there. We will have to create consistent interaction with Denel, even if it means we again try to have another oversight visit there, so that we also compare the notes of the previous visit with the current realities now there. I think we need to do that. Honorable members, I think we have to release the minister with his team, Denel, the department, and the members have to leave behind so that we finalize our meeting. Can we say bye to our guests?
Thank you, Chair.
Bye.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Thank you, members.
Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Honorable members, last week we had a session where the secretary was not available due to the circumstances he was confronted with at home. We had to have a person who was acting on his behalf, hence we could not adopt the minutes of the previous session. Therefore, I would like him to present all the minutes so that we tackle them quick in order to prepare for 2 o'clock. We still have to have to attend Parliament. Secretary?
Yes, Chairperson. We've got 2 sets of minutes. I'm going to try and fly there.
Sorry, Secretary. you either disappear or be visible. Currently, we only see your chair. I mean, yeah, that's better.
Can you see me now?
Yes, we can see you now.
Okay. Well, like I said that we've got two sets of minutes. The first minute is the minute of the 3rd of February. I'm quickly going to go through them. Basically, it was the briefing by the Department of Public Enterprises on the progress that has been made in addressing challenges facing state-owned companies. So it was basically also an update on the work of the business rescue practitioners with regards to SAA, and also an update on companies that have not tabled their annual reports. The meeting was attended by the minister who led the delegation. The minister did make remarks on the minister's remarks regarding the constraints, the fiscal constraints and the impact that COVID-19 had on companies and the challenges that boards and the work that boards and executives of state-owned companies continue to do to stabilize. And then 2.1, basically, it's a synopsis of what the DG presented on behalf of the Department of Public Enterprises. The presentation basically dealt with the challenges and the state of each state-owned company, the interventions that have been made by the department, and progress that has been made in addressing those challenges. Also, reasons that were given for the late submission for annual reports for Alexco, Safcol, and Danel, and the airlines. The presentation also gave an account on how the department and companies were affected by COVID-19. Those were the observations of the committee and some of the responses that were given by the department. And one of the resolutions that were taken for that particular meeting was that the committee must seek a legal advice on the non-tabling of annual reports by state-owned companies. Furthermore, to get an advice of what avenues and mechanisms are available to the committee to enforce Section 65(2)(a) of the PFNA. Those are the minutes of the 3rd. And subsequent to that, an annual legal advice was secured and was sent out for member to members with regards to that particular issue. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you, Secretary. Is there anyone want to adopt these minutes, honorable members, as a good reflection of our session? Honorable members, are you there? I'm looking at the hands.
Honorable Chairperson Shabalala here.
Yes, Honorable Shabalala.
Yes, I rise to move that the minutes be adopted as read and read by the Secretary. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Shabalala. Any second, Honorable Members? You can just speak if you can't be able to raise your hand. Honorable Members, you are wasting your time. Where are these members?
Thanks, Chair. I don't know what is happening with my video. Am I audible?
Yeah, you're audible, Honorable Nkwanazi.
Yes, I second Honorable Shabalala. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Is there any other minute, Secretary?
Yes, Chairperson. I'm flighting the minutes of last week, which was the 17th. Okay, these were minutes of last week, the 17th of February 2021. Basically, it was briefing by Eskom on the impact of coal prices, load shedding, cost plus mines, electricity tariffs, and escalating cost of the Medupi and Kusile, on the security of supply and performance of the company, and also on the update on the Kusile employee accommodation. That's the minutes. Number one is an opening. Number two, it's the minister introduced the delegation requested the CEO to proceed. Number two is a presentation by the Department of Public Enterprises, which was led by the general manager and the CFO. The presentation is available. Then the observation is it's observations for quality, Kusile and Medupi, the residential project, Dubai incident, independent power producers, financial sustainability, maintenance, tariff increase, municipal debt, rating agencies, environmental legal contravention, talent management, project management, chief restructuring officer. And then also the responses in terms of what has been raised by the committee. Everything is included also regarding the Dubai incident. And then the consideration of minutes, the committee said they will look at the minutes in the next meeting. And then resolution was basically to defer the meeting minutes to the next meeting. Thank you, Chairperson.
Yes, thank you, Secretary. Can I get somebody for the adoption of the minutes?
No, with Chairperson.
Honorable Kumede.
May I move that the minutes read by the Secretary be adopted?
Yes, thank you, Honorable Kumede. Any other second, Honorable members?
Okay, Honorable Chabalala, I rise to second the adoption of the minutes as raised by Comrade Kumede. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Honorable Chabalala. Honorable members, I think we reached the end of the meeting. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you.
Long live the chair.